Well, hello, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome. This is Jim from theoffside.com bringing you the 11th, can you believe it, the 11th Argyle podcast. And what a busy week it has been. Argyle bouncing back on Tuesday from apparently a rather undeserved defeat at Derby, where, as you know, we'd taken the lead, wonder goal from Paul Gallagher, but pegged back by a pretty resilient Derby side and an inspired performance, one of his few, from Chris Commons. And despite a load of pressure in the second half towards the last 5 minutes, Argyle unable to nick an equaliser. But Tuesday night at home to Preston, we managed to put that to rights. It wasn't, if I'm being honest, the best performance I've ever seen from the boys in green. Although, from the first 20 minutes, you thought it might have been going to be. They were knocking the ball around and giving it best. Really, in a very sort of slick and stylish manner. Mackey and Gallagher and Clark, all and Summerfield in particular, all combining well and pulling Preston all over the shop, really. We went a goal up, thanks to God's footballer, an arching header from Rory Fallon, and then just seemed to take our foot completely off the gas. We had to reshuffle the team because of an injury to Dimbe, which meant, I thought this was a bit odd, moving Carl Duguid out of the centre of midfield, where he's done such an excellent job over the last five or six games, and putting him in at right back and bringing on Jim Patterson to play in central midfield. Now, I don't know if Patterson has ever played in central midfield before, and he gave it his best shot and put a shift in and managed to get his foot on the ball a little bit, but he's not a central midfielder by any stretch of the imagination, and there were a number of other options open to Sturrock out there, whether it was pulling Chris Clark, who has played right back before, and maybe putting Patterson out on the left if that's what he wanted, or bringing Nicholas Marin on, which we're all desperate and anxious to see, or whether it's just simply involved shuffling Chris Barker across to the right back and dropping Patterson in at left back. Moving Duguid out of the middle really seemed to disrupt the flow of the team, made it harder for Argyle to get any sort of consistency in terms of their passing and movement together, and it was, you know, very much a cough and a splutter from there on in. Argyle aided and assisted by the fact that Preston were pretty woeful, really, apart for the last 5 minutes or so, 4 minutes of completely undeserved injury time from referee Andy Penn. They never really threatened there. One header easily cleared off the line by Summerfield in the first half. But other than that, they didn't really threaten Argyle's goal at all until, I say, injury time, when there was one superb save from Roman Lario and one unbelievable miss right at the death from Sean St. Ledger, 5 yards out, the goal at his mercy, and he contrived to fire it over, much to the consternation of the PNE bench, which I regarded as justice, really. I'd not been impressed by Sean St. Ledger's antics any time I'd seen him. He'd already managed to get Chris Alumo sent off for a nothing sort of head-to-head thing when they played and were comprehensively outplayed by Wolves up at their place. And this evening he was up to his old tricks again, most notably with Rory Fallon, with whom he'd had a pretty major tussle all evening. The two of them going for the ball. Fallon wins it cleanly. Ledger goes down and rolls around on the floor. And out comes the yellow card. Rory Fallon was pretty incensed by that, and let St. Ledger know in no uncertain terms. So there really was a feeling of poetic justice when St. Ledger missed that golden opportunity right at the end to nick something for Preston. Good performances for Argyle from Jamie Mackey. Probably the best I've seen him play, to be fair. He was up and down and cutting inside and really, in a period of the game when most of the Argyle team seemed to have lead in their boots, he still seemed to be running on a pretty full tank, and a couple of particularly strong challenges as well down in the bottom corner when Preston looked like they might break away. So yeah, thumbs up for him. The other person I thought who played really well was Craig Cathcart, who was calm and solid and assured at the back, and seems to play really well with Marcel Sipe, who was another one who had an outstanding game, really bothered by absolutely nothing. And I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here and suggest that if we have the money to sign only one of our loanees this season, that it should be Cathcart and not Gallagher. Gallagher has done phenomenally well for us, and I hope we manage to keep him for the whole season. And I do hope we manage to sign him in the end. But Craig Cathcart really has won for the future. His performances at centre back, he seems to listen to instructions and get better as the season goes on. And that's really what you want from a player, someone who's going to listen and improve. And I think he's going to be an international and a really serious Premier League player in the not too distant future. And it would be brilliant if we could have a little bit of that. So, yeah, if it's a choice between Cathcart and Gallagher, I'm going to be controversial here and say that I would prefer to see Cathcart waving a new 3-year contract rather than the Blackburn midfielder striker. Because build from the back, as the old mantra says, build from the back. On then to Ipswich and the return of David Norris. To boo or not to boo, that is the question. Essentially, two schools of thought here. School of thought number one being that Norris is a good and faithful servant for Argyle, always gave 100% in every game he played, was part of, I'm tempted to use the word iconic, but I shan't, a much loved and famous championship winning side, indeed provided the cross for that sort of, Argyle era defining moment of Mickey Evans's headed goal in the Rangers game. And in short, deserves nothing but warm applause from the Argyle faithful, at least up until kick-off. The second school of thought says that Norris's departure and the protracted nature of it really did define our season last year. If he had the decency to see at least part of his contract out and stay with us to the end of the season, we might well have been up there in the playoffs with a shot at promotion. And his refusal to play for Argyle when it seemed that anymore, when it seemed as though the negotiations were becoming, intractable and protracted and bogged down, really is not the way to treat employers who've given you an awful lot of support, who were looking to reward you to the best of their abilities. And all this stuff about him giving 100% for Argyle was merely him doing what he was paid to do. And therefore, he should be given the same sort of treatment that was afforded to a contract rebel like Tony Capaldi. Also, undeniably the case that if you boo a player, they play worse, which is why I never boo our own players, because I don't want them to play worse, I want them to play better. You look at Capaldi when he came back for Cardiff, you look at Ebanks Blake when he came back for Wolves. Both players subjected to consistent and sustained booing throughout the match, and their performances suffer. Capaldi had an absolute mare for Cardiff, and Ebanks Blake didn't score, was taken off, and barely threatened. It clearly gets to them, and there is an argument to say that the crowd need to use whatever psychological weapons are at their disposal. Nevertheless, I'm going to come out fairly firmly on the side of saying that Norris should not be booed on Saturday. I shan't be booing him. I don't imagine too many other people will, in all fairness. He was a crowd favourite, faithful and loyal servant for Argyle for whatever it was, 5 years, 6 years, and he should and deserves warm and generous applause. In the same way, for example, that Elliot Ward, when he came back to Argyle, got warm and generous applause. In fact, even, remember this now, even Jason Jarrett, a footnote in Argyle's history, was received warmly when he returned, having left. And both of those were only loan players. So I think that the least the Argyle faithful can do is turn it on, as I say, right up until kick-off for Norris on Saturday. As for how the game is going to go, team news for Ipswich is thin on the ground. And of course, all this stuff about booing or not booing Norris is on the proviso that he actually plays. He was left out of their draw at Forest on Tuesday night because of an injury. And it may be that he doesn't even make the trip. Though I have a hunch he may have been being saved for what is clearly going to be an emotional occasion for him. Pablo Cunhago, John Stead and John Walters will be forming, I would imagine, some sort of trio at the front. Whether that's with Walters pushed wide or not, be interesting to see. In the midfield, Norris, assuming he plays, will probably be the hub around which a great deal of their stuff revolves. But they're a side in transition, Ipswich, and there are distinct murmurings that should they fail to get a result on Saturday against us, then it will be Magilton's last. I should say, of course, that my view on booing, and specifically not booing Norris, does not extend to the Ipswich manager, whose role and destabilising of the player is legendary now down here at Home Park. I think it might be quite a tense game, possibly with chances few and far between. Argyle will probably have to make at least one change. Matt Dumbe doesn't look like he's going to make it. I imagine that Sturrock is pinning all his hopes on David McNamee being fit. Whether he wants to freshen the midfield and the attack up as well would be interesting to see. Fallon and Clark in particular look decidedly leg-weary, and he may feel that it is time to give Marin and Impenza, or even to bring back Jason Puncheon or Steve McLean, who was on the bench on Saturday, an opportunity to show what they can do, bearing in mind we do have these ridiculous five games in 14 days. So I would expect to see a couple of changes perhaps in the Argyle team. Chris Clark, as I say, who's been busting a gut for the Argyle cause, really did seem to have run out of gas on Tuesday. And Fallon too looked leggy despite his goal. And it may be that a bit of extra zip up top is what's required. Yeah, looking forward to that very much indeed. Third thing I want to talk about today is a guy called Phil Gartside. If you don't know who Phil Gartside is, he is the chairman of Bolton Wanderers. And he was in the newspapers yesterday as making a number of rather bizarre and outlandish suggestions for the reform of the game. What he would like to do, among other things, is have a two-tier premiership made up of 18 teams each and no relegation to the lower leagues therefrom. So an elite group, if you like, of 36 clubs with no risk of them dropping out. So essentially what we're talking about is a franchising of the game's elite. Now, before we say anything else, we need to be clear that this is not a new idea. When the Premiership was first mooted under the guise of the Super League in 1989, an 18-club no-relegation league was precisely what was envisioned. And it was only through protracted negotiations that the FA managed, at the cost of TV rights and the abandoning of sharing of gate receipts, to persuade them to include relegation to and promotion out of the Football League as part of the package. And since then, the idea of a Premiership second division, if you like, has never been far away. And it was seriously mooted 5 or 6 years ago, I think, when it had some sort of bizarre name, which I cannot now remember. But essentially, this is not a new idea. It's been around for a long time. Gartside's justification for it is rather bizarre. He says that it's needed to address the lack of competitiveness at the top of the Football League. This is what he says. It would even everything out and make it more competitive on that basis. Well, how? Problem in the Premier League is that four clubs, and only four, are realistic contenders for the title. There's an argument to say that really it's only down to two. It's between Chelsea and Man United, and that's it. And I don't see how ring-fencing 36 clubs is going to address that in any way, shape or form. He goes on to say, we've already got to the situation where the three clubs that go down from the Premier League are usually the three that come up, although a couple of others might sneak in. That is actually just plain wrong. If you look at the stats, which I have, being assiduous in my research, of the 14 teams that have been relegated in the last 5 years, 14, not 15, because Birmingham have been relegated twice, nine have not been promoted back to the Premiership. There are really only three clubs out of those 15 that you could genuinely identify as being yo-yo clubs: Birmingham, West Brom and Sunderland. 12 different teams have been promoted to the Premier League. And of the clubs that have been promoted, only, I say, 12 different clubs promoted, and only, I'm counting here, six have come straight back down again. There has never been a situation where all three clubs promoted at the end of one season have been the same three relegated at the end of the following season. Mr. Gartside's facts are quite simply and plainly wrong. There's a great deal of competitiveness between, you know, the top of the Championship and the bottom of the Premiership. That isn't where the problem lies. He goes on to say, "I know a lot of Football League clubs won't like it, but some will. Can we have their names and addresses, please? Because I can only think of a few who would be at all enamoured of this proposal. This idea that Premiership should cut itself adrift from the rest of the Football League, you know, really strikes at the heart of everything that the game has always stood for. One of the exciting things about the game in this country is that whoever you support, you always have the possibility of dreaming that one day your club might just make it." When I'm not watching Argyle, I like to go and watch my very local, my hometown team of Camelford. And Camelford play in the Pyramid. They play in the South West Peninsula League One. And just as an idle sort of fantasy, really, I sat down and worked out how long it would take them to be promoted to League Two if they were to win promotion every year from here on in. And it's a big pyramid. It would take them until 2016 to make it to League Two. But that fantasy is one that I know a number of Camelford supporters hold on to, you know, just, you know, as a raison d'etre almost for playing the game, the idea that one day you can climb out of where you are and become a force. And actually, if you look at Truro City under Kevin Heaney and his money, that is precisely what is going on. There's a club that's enjoyed successive promotions in the last 3 or 4 years. They now sit pretty firmly at the top of the Southern League South and West Division. And that only puts them, by the way, three promotions away from League Two. And this principle that you know, any club, given a winning formula, can climb its way through the league is surely what our game is about. And the idea that we should adopt an American model of franchising and a closed league is really, really quite appalling. Gartside goes on to try to argue that this is in some way, you know, needed to combat foreign owners. He's worried about foreign ownership. And he says that you know, local businessmen who run clubs need to be protected from the influx of outside investors with seemingly unlimited funds. Well, I know capitalism isn't really very much in vogue at the moment, but isn't this how businesses are supposed to work? I mean, we're always hearing about how the game needs to become more businesslike. And Gartside appears to be asking for special pleading for local people who don't have quite as much money as people from Dubai or America. And the issue about bad ownership, you know, is precisely that. It's about bad ownership, not where somebody comes from. The problem with foreign ownership is not that the owners are foreign, but that they're simply interested in making a financial killing out of the club and have no interest or empathy with the fans, with the traditions of the club, that they're simply interested in using the football club as a cash cow. Football actually isn't a business, it's a game. It's about passion, it's about history, it's about tradition, it's about community. And an owner that, or a chairman or whatever, who has a sense of that, who has a feel for that, and who understands that his role is not simply to maximize revenue streams, is a good owner. A bad owner is one who regards everything as up for grabs, playing staff, infrastructure, and sees it all merely as a way of making money. Some of the worst owners in recent history, I'm referring in particular to the guy at Wrexham, weren't foreign. It's not about where an owner comes from, it's about what they're like. And all this is really, you know, unsavoury and special pleading on behalf of Phil Gartside. But the cynic in me has a graver concern, which is that it seems unlikely that Gartside would have gone public with this off his own bat, that he may have been put up to it by, you know, a cartel of the Premier League chairman to float the idea and see what sort of reaction it gets. And also, it may well be that some of this restructuring, some of these plans have been floated in order to soften the fan base up for something almost as bad. There will be, I'm sure, in the days to come, you know, hysterical outrage and reaction to his ideas, exactly as mine has been, but from people far more influential. And, you know, it's tempting. It's an old political trick to throw up into the air a really, really, really awful idea and get people to react against it. And then when the proposals actually come through, because they're slightly better than what was trailed originally, people are much more inclined to accept it on the basis, well, at least it isn't, you know, a closed premiership, game 39 or whatever. You know, it's, you know, a manoeuvring technique, if you like. And I'm wondering if this is the Premier League attempting to get game 39 through by the back door, or, you know, some form of ever restricting of the access to the game's elite. If you are concerned about it, if it is something that makes you nervous, and if you think Garth Side is wrong and that these sort of proposals need to be resisted, you need to join the Football Supporters Federation, the one organisation that bats for you rather than for the clubs, that has your interests rather than those of agents or managers or players or chairmen. FSF, bang it into Google, you'll find it. Sign up, it's not expensive, it's £10 or £15 a year or something, and gives you the opportunity to make your voice heard, because you're going to see more and more and more of these proposals coming through, and unless you're ready to stand up and be counted in some way, then, you know, I'd like to suggest that, you know, you really don't have a leg to stand on if you don't. You know, it's something that unless we all stand together, these things are going to get pushed through. And it was in no small way due to the cohered resistance of the FSF that Game 39 was finally and firmly kicked into touch. So I urge you, all of you, if you're not already a member, please do join the Football Supporters Federation. That's all from me. Longer than usual this week. I hope you've managed to stay awake. Here's hoping that Argyle can pull something off on Saturday against Ipswich. Please don't boo Norris. Give him a cheer until the game actually starts. And then sing your hearts out for the lads in green. Take very good care. Be safe. Be lucky. And keep it green.